Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake McQuire. And as we wrapped up the AFC last week, that means we are starting the NFC this week, and we will start in the North. And speaking about the North, I know it was not the NFC, but the Bengals played last night, and Joe Burrow took some ridiculous sacks. So I slept like a baby. I'm happy today, Jacob. I feel vindicated and ready to talk about some more football. What about you?
Vindication from a preseason game is in and of itself a dangerous game, is what I'll say. Our last episode was about the AFC South, and one of the teams we talked about were the Indianapolis Colts. And I asked you a question. I said, Daniel Jones has to be the starter at this point, right? And we went back and forth, but I think we ultimately agreed. We were right. Today, Daniel Jones was named the starter, not just for week one, but head coach Shane Steichen said, this is a season thing. I don't want to put him on a short leash, end quote. Daniel Jones is starting, at least the first, I would imagine the first 4 to 5 games, unless an injury or something happens like that. I do think Richardson will have another chance to play this season in particular, because I don't think the Colts are going to be a superstar team by any means. But in the kind of vein of young QBs not working out where they initially were drafted, I think the first team we can talk about is the Chicago Bears. And while I think it's early to judge if Caleb Williams is going to work out or not, he didn't have a great season last year. Just like 2 years ago, the number one overall pick, Bryce Young, really bad season. This year, or last year, I should say, Caleb Williams wasn't as bad, but it was still pretty bad. And a lot of it was the stuff around him, like the coaching, but a lot of it was on Williams himself. I think the key for this season for them is going to be, can the coaching kind of fix and rework what Caleb Williams is supposed to be?
So Dan Orlovsky got on, I think, like ESPN First Take, and this was, I want to say, months ago at this point. But in essence said that, like, Caleb Williams had to break down everything he had learned over the past decade as a quarterback and relearn the position. And it makes sense because when you look at what Ben Johnson did with Jared Goff with the Detroit Lions, and obviously he's going to tailor the offense more to Caleb Williams, but when you look at kind of the structure in which he worked in, everything was set and predicated on timing. And we heard this, everything leading up about Ben Johnson is there was going to be no gray area, which Shane Waldron apparently left last year, is that, hey, guys were not sure about how they needed to run the route, where they needed to be. And Ben Johnson is answering all of those details. He's giving all the answers to the test. Caleb Williams just has to be able to drop back, react, and make an accurate throw. And I think that is where it's going to come back to, is obviously he looked impressive in a preseason game against a vanilla defense, and it looks good and will probably look good for the first 15 to 20 plays of every game, because Ben Johnson is going to be able to script that level of efficiency. But as the game progresses, is Caleb Williams going to hesitate on certain reads? Is he going to hold the ball for too long? And the longer you hold onto the ball, the more likely a bad play is going to happen. It's not always going to be the highlight plays that they love showing on the recap. And so that is, I think, the focus about this team is, can he provide more consistency at the quarterback position to unlock the players on this offense and allow them to, quote unquote, cook?
You mentioned Jared Goff, also another former number one overall pick who I think Sean McVay is probably as good as you're going to get as a rookie, or it was his second year once McVay came in. But transition to the Lions had to kind of be reworked and eventually became a viable starter for a team that made it to the NFC Championship a couple years ago. With the Bears in particular, I think the consistency thing is big, especially when you look at the additions they brought in. Just real quick on the defensive side of the ball, where they were middle of the pack last year, they bring in two guys on the defensive line. Grady Jarrett, been a pro for a decade, really good like culture, locker room guy. He still has some stuff left in the tank. And then Dio Odengbo from the Colts, an edge rusher who is projected to start. I don't think the defense is going to be much different outside of Dennis Allen rearranging some things as opposed to what Matt Eberflus did. The additions on offense, however, I think are going to help bring the consistency that Ben Johnson's looking for. Just looking at the projected starters, this doesn't even include some of the later stuff. They bring in Olamide Zaccheaus. I don't know if he'll start over second-round pick Luther Burden, but there's competition there. Colston Loveland was a top 10 pick at tight end. Three new starters along the interior of the offensive line, right? They trade for Joe Tooney. They trade for Jonah Jackson. They signed Drew Dahlman to a pretty significant deal for a center. I think it was like $40 million over 3 years or something like that. Really, really high for a center. But all that to say is they want to rework the offensive line. And while a lot of the stuff was Caleb Williams' fault last year, a lot of it wasn't. So if they can get an offensive line, which if you kind of composite all O-line scores last year, they finished around 16th. If you can get that up to about 10th, I think that would go a long way toward helping Caleb Williams feel more comfortable this year. That way he can be the point-and-shoot guy that Ben Johnson needs him to be.
He's going to have to find the ability to stay calm because he wasn't under pressure, under duress. And to your point, maybe that's because of the way they went about fixing the interior offensive line. And if they're able to keep him protected, keep him comfortable to where he's quite literally dropping back, diagnosing what's going on and making the throw, and he feels comfortable doing that, maybe he can start to develop good habits. But again, Caleb Williams' selling point coming out of college was how he could operate out of structure. So I think all of these questions that we have about him is how well can he operate within structure and how foolproof is Ben Johnson's system. When you flip over the defensive side, like you said, they had a couple additions on the defensive line, but I'm curious, like outside of Montez Sweat, like who's going to be their pressure getter? You just drafted Austin Booker with a fourth round pick. I think they moved up, traded some future draft capital to go get this guy. And he's got to be able to step up in year two and leading into kind of like the midway of his rookie contract. And so you look at that in juxtaposition. The defense that Dennis Allen is going to be running is a little bit different than Matt Eberflus's. It's going to be more man heavy, more too high looks. And so with that, it's going to be interesting to see, are the players currently on the roster equipped to play that style of ball, or are those guys equipped to more play Matt Eberflus' style of ball? And if that's the case, we may see a defensive regression from this unit, which puts a lot more of a burden on the Bears' offense to carry the load.
I really like the secondary, especially pairing with what Dennis Allen likes to do from a man coverage standpoint. You have a lot of good players back there. Jalen Johnson's probably a top 10 cover corner in the league. Kyler Gordon got paid recently. Jaquan Brisker's a good young safety. Kevin Byard is he was like the Buda Baker of maybe 8 years ago, like just consistently all pro bowl kind of guy with Tennessee. It's the front, like you're saying, that I have questions with. I guess they're going to hope for internal growth from guys like Jervon Dexter, Zach Pickens, some of the Austin Booker, like you mentioned, some of the young guys they have drafted over the last couple years. But for me, this team's all about offense, right? You bring in Ben Johnson, who was the prized catch of the last, you'd say, three head coaching cycles, right? The shiny new QB, well, not new, but he's a year removed from the draft QB. All the X factors, in my opinion, are going to be on offense. And the thing I'm most interested in seeing, outside of if Caleb Williams is going to work with this new look, is how is Colston Loveland going to be used? They used a top 10 pick on a tight end. I know, well, you can't even say since Bowers, because Bowers went 13 or 14 a couple years ago. We talked pre-draft about how a top 10 pick for a tight end may not be super prudent, especially when you look at value positions and positions of value. In this class, I think you could get away with it because outside of the top eight or so guys, the talent really fell off. But I wonder how they're going to use Colston Loveland, considering that's what they spent the top 10 pick on. They could have taken Matthew Golden, right, with that 10th pick. Or who was the second receiver? Emeka Egbuka could have been the pick there, but they chose to go with a tight end. So between Loveland and last year's top 10 pick, Romo Dunze, those are the two guys I have my eye on the most this season.
When you bring up Loveland, I think the purpose of having him there is to have viable pass catchers when you deploy 12 personnel. And even when you're running 11 personnel, to be able to disguise the run and the pass. And something I'm going to bring up, because Ben Johnson brings this from the Detroit Lions, and I think he's going to utilize this a lot more, but the ability to play under center and how usually when an offense gets under center, it's like play action to the run. It's not just straight dropbacks. And so you have an element of quick game that you can add and tie into this. and the other teams that we're going to talk about, like the Bears with Matt LaFleur, were under center quite a bit and were quite efficient doing it. Minnesota, the same kind of story. And you can all tie these head coaches either together. So like Sean McVay's tied to Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota. Ben Johnson has ties really to like Sean Payton, but he is considered along with like the Sean McVay's and the Kyle Shanahan's. And then Green Bay with Matt LaFleur, like he was with those guys in Washington. So you're seeing a common thread of a lot of these guys gravitating towards being able to disguise the run in the pass. And so you bring up the value of a guy like Colston Loveland. And I think that's what he's bringing to the table. It's very similar to what Sam Laporta was bringing for the Detroit Lions. I think he is a better pass catcher than Laporta, better route runner too. So at that point, it's whether or not he can be an impact player in the run game, especially blocking. And so we may not see it in the stat line, but if he's able to manipulate some of the numbers or where guys are moving to, that in and of itself could open up lanes and holes for other players and playmakers on this offense.
For sure. I don't know if the Bears did enough to get in the playoff conversation. I don't know if they're ready to take that leap. But the next three teams in this division not only are in the conversation, they made the playoffs last year. And the first one that we'll talk about who came in third in the division are the Green Bay Packers. I think when you look at this division, there's a clear tier break between top three and then the Bears. The Packers are a really good team. They just fell short in a couple of key areas, and one of those areas was division games, where they were 1-5. They actually lost to the Bears for the first time in almost a decade, maybe a little bit more than a decade. The offense and defense were both top 10 in a lot of stuff, other than success rate. So as the drives went, not so great, but down in and down out, they were really good. Jeff Hafley coming over last year as the new defensive coordinator, I think he helped. I don't think he unlocked all of the talent that's on this defense, but he certainly helped. And then the offense, while Jordan Love kind of took his lumps, he had some injuries, I think the offense was largely still.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Pretty effective. And the Packers did something they haven't done since, I think, 2002 is the year that they did this. They drafted a receiver in the first round. So clearly they want to help Jordan Love. Clearly there's some stuff there, or they identify some things that the offense was missing. How do you think Matthew Golden is going to fit into the Matt LaFleur offense?
Matthew Golden is supposed to be your man coverage beater, because they have enough guys in terms of the wide receiver depth to beat different zone looks, to kind of put a lot of stress on the defense and create leverage based on what they're able to do in the run game. So I think the addition of Josh Jacobs is kind of being not discussed as prevalently as the addition of, like what you said, Matthew Golden. And I think with how they've constructed the offensive line, how deep they are there, they can get big and just run the ball just like the Bills and the Eagles did last year. That's what made them so successful in 2024 and why they were a playoff team. So I don't think they're going to stray away from that identity. If anything, they're going to lean more into that. And that's going to create some play action looks for Jordan Love, allowing him to, I think, put his arm on display. When we talk about like the Packers and them trying to take a step, they have to really be able to unlock that aspect like they have been and take that to another level. But they also need to be consistent and hit those short and intermediate throws and keep themselves ahead of the chains. Because like you said, from a success rate standpoint, that's where this team is lacking. They are not consistent enough. And maybe you can tie that to this being a very young team. This is a team that is getting older and is starting to get more reps together, to maybe all it is it's going to take another like year or so for them to get over that hump and now be this juggernaut that nobody really can compete with. And it just took time developing. And I trust this coaching staff. I think when they made the shift on the defensive side and they brought in new faces, that really reinvigorated that side of the ball. And you pair that with what Matt LaFleur is doing on the offense, this is a team that I think is still trending upwards, even though last year it came across very stagnated compared to what we expected.
a lot of good coaching staffs in this division between the three playoff teams and now what we expect Ben Johnson to be. And like you said, I think LaFleur, despite them not winning 15 games or 14 games like the other teams, had a pretty good season. He got a lot out of Malik Willis. They traded for him right before the season started because Jordan Love was dealing with some lingering stuff in training camp. Love gets hurt in week one down in Brazil. I think people were complaining, or the players were complaining about the field conditions down there. And Malik Willis came in admirably. He was like 2-1 or 3-1 or something as the backup. So I think the offense should be fine. The defense is what I'm more honed in on this season. I think a second season under Jeff Hafley can be even better for them. I know guys like Micah Parsons and Trey Hendrickson probably won't get traded, but if there's a team in the NFC that I think is big game hunting for like a defensive star, this would be the team for it. Because outside of Nate Hobbs, who was one of their big free agent additions, Aaron Banks being the other one, there's not a lot of high-end change, we'll say, on the defensive side of the ball. Outside of Hobbs, the corner from the Las Vegas Raiders, like we're mentioning, and then some later round draft picks, that's kind of it. Isaiah Simmons, they added as well. But the Packers aren't known to be big free agent spenders, so they're going to hope for a lot of internal growth from the talent they have on that defense.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that they went out and got like a Xavier McKinney last year was honestly quite surprising. But again, you're leaning into Devontae Wyatt. You're leaning into Lucas Van Ness, those younger players that are continuing to ascend. And you want them to take steps like you saw Kenny Clark and Rashawn Gary do early on in their careers. But there isn't that like elite, just blue chip player. Honestly, I want to say on either side of the ball, it's hard to find like anybody like truly above like that kind of like good starter Pro Bowl level to like, oh, this is like a guy that we consider like top five, top 10 at their position. And I think that is going to be the difference for the Packers in taking a step, is somebody on that team needs to be that, whether it's one of these wide receivers, whether it's Jordan Love, maybe a couple guys on the defense. But like, in order to go from just like a playoff contender to Super Bowl contender, that's really the growth. You have to see some guys just bud as superstars. And maybe that's Edgerrin Cooper. He had a really great rookie season as a linebacker. If he can continue to develop on that end, Xavier McKinney is that for you on the back end. There are pieces there, and the ingredients are in a position to where it could come together. But it could also just be what we've seen the past couple of years, and it doesn't really get past what we've seen. And I think that's a very viable outcome as well. This is, I think, a make or break season for how we perceive this group moving forward.
For sure. I don't think it's make or break for the actual staff or anything, but as far as perception goes, I completely agree. Matt LaFleur has had, three back-to-back-to-back 13-3 seasons before the 17 game season started. He's made the playoffs the last 2 years. Like, we know what he's capable of. We know what a good roster like this is capable of. To me, it just comes down to, like you're saying, internal defensive growth. I think Edgerrin Cooper was outstanding for a rookie last year. He could be taking like the Pro Bowl fringe all-pro leap this season. And then, like I alluded to at the start of this, it's just about playing within the division. The Packers are probably the fifth or sixth best NFC team. It's just unfortunate that two of the other teams are in their division. So they have to be a bit more disciplined in those games, play a little bit better. And maybe we're talking about them as the 14-win team next year or something like that. But with that in mind, the Minnesota Vikings won 14 games last year. If you thought they were going to win 14 games, you're lying, or you're a huge, huge Vikings fan, because it was out of nowhere, right? J.J. McCarthy gets hurt, I think, in the first or second preseason game. I think he only played one last year. And Sam Darnold, the guy that was going to be the bridge quarterback, comes in, steps up, and played relatively well throughout most of the season. At the end, as you so lovingly put it, he turned into a pumpkin. He faltered. It's funny, they lost four games total all season, two against the Lions, two against the Rams. Darnold wasn't great in any of those contests. And ultimately, it fell apart because the quarterback was limiting and the offensive line was sneakily very, very bad with a lot of the injuries they were dealing with. They've kind of replaced a lot of those guys. Three new starters along the interior offensive line. J.J. McCarthy is slated to start this year. Do you think this team can be any better than they were last year? I know 14 wins is a lot, but if what J.J. McCarthy can do in year two can kind of equal what Darnold did last year, why isn't 12 plus wins on the table?
Because I think we're talking about the Minnesota Vikings. And what I mean by that is this team tends to overperform when there's this almost like negative perception or this idea that they aren't a good enough team to compete right now. And then when the pieces are in place and everybody goes, this is a team that's going to contend, they seem to underperform. And the best example of this is you go back to 2017, Sam Bradford at the time, they were trying to get what was left in the tank from him. And he gets hurt early on in case Keenum takes over, and they end up getting the second seed in the NFC. Then they go out, they spend big money for Kirk Cousins the next year, and they never bank it back to the NFC championship game. And so that's where it's like that team thought they could take a step. Like they were on the doorstep, and then they didn't go anywhere past that. And so that's where I think a lot of people think the transition from Sam Darnold to JJ McCarthy, it's going to be the step. And while I love the interior offensive line additions, they are huge upgrades to what was in that spot in those positions last year. The left guard, I think being a rookie, you might have a couple questions about, but I think everything from preseason film shows that Donovan Jackson can hold his own. You bring Ryan Kelly and Will Fries in from the Indianapolis Colts, and if they can stay healthy, they've shown to be viable starters that can play well next to each other already. And you have a top 10, arguably top 5 offensive tackle duo. So I think you feel good and confident about that group. Jordan Mason is the running back. Your wide receivers are Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison when he gets back from suspension. You have TJ Hockenson as your tight end. This feels like a very cushiony environment for JJ McCarthy, but I'm not going to have these high hopes, especially when Justin Jefferson comes out in training camp and goes, this is in essence his rookie year. There are going to be mistakes and growing pains. And while I think a lot of that is going to be shielded based on the offense Kevin O'Connell is going to build, I think our expectations for this team needs to probably be around 10 wins, because there are going to be growing pains throughout this, regardless of how good the roster is top to bottom.
I have to agree, but I'm going to say why that this is different from 2017 and what would it have been, 2021?
I think there's a lot more hope because this is a younger quarterback that you're building around. I'm just, the expectations in year one, like, I don't know if they're going to be nearly as good as they were last year.
That's super fair, because the expectations last year were, what, 8 wins, 9 wins? But what I'm going to say is, compared to those other out-of-nowhere Viking seasons, they have Brian Flores now. Their defense last year was 3rd in EPA per play, 7th in success rate, 5th in points per game allowed. And you could argue the defense got better with the additions of Javon Hargrave and Jonathan Allen plugging up the interior. Vikings were like a pretty bad run defense last year. I think that it doesn't get solved, but it gets a lot better adding those two guys. With that, and with the turnover on the offensive side of the ball, which even if Donovan Jackson has rookie growing pains, even if Ryan Kelly and Will Fries aren't good, they're way better than what the Vikings were trying out there last year. It, like, when we saw that the Texans signed Ed Ingram from the Vikings, that was like an enormous red flag, because, and Cam Robinson for that matter, because we're like, we're trying to help CJ Stroud. Those guys might be worse than the guys that were blocking for Stroud last year. And that's what Sam Darnold had to deal with. I think the greatest thing about Darnold's season last year was he masked a lot of the O-line deficiencies. I think if the offensive line has less deficiencies and JJ McCarthy feels a bit more insulated, then this could be a team that wins 10, 11, 12 games and may not shock the world, but relative to lower expectations, might shock a few people.
They might. I just like Diana, I think it's Rousseau or Diana Russini.
Russini.
Hey, she's kind of been the spearhead from, like, I think a national media standpoint of, like, going like, hey, like, let's like taper the expectations for JJ McCarthy in this offense. And I think a lot of the highlights that we've seen from camp from him and making some of these throws, it's on 7-7s. It's not like with offensive line and defensive linemen in front of you crowding, not only throwing lanes, but pressure in your face. And I'm curious to see how he operates with that. We saw one drive where under pressure, he was able to throw a nice out route to his wide receiver. Was able to deliver a accurate throw. And if you see more of that, then I think the expectation is this team might be able to continue to make a run down the stretch if he continues to build along some of these, I would say, good, what would be the word? Like, good indicators that he's trending in the upwards direction, like a Bo Nix last year. So that's what I'm more looking for from him. The defense, like you said, shored up the interior.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Added some pieces in the secondary. I'm not a big Isaiah Rodgers fan, but if he can get developed by Brian Flores on that back end, that's going to be huge. What causes any concern for you on this team? Is it the interior offensive lineman that transitioning? Is it the back end on the secondary with losing like a Cam Bynum in free agency? Like, what has you worried that this team is going to fall off? Is it what we keep discussing with JJ McCarthy and him not necessarily living up to the hype that might be around him with a 13 win team last season? Like, what is their kryptonite, the Achilles heel?
It's going to be McCarthy, right? And not because I don't have faith in him being able to play within structure. If he's like Bo Nix was last year, this team wins 14 games again. Like, the roster and the coaching is just that good. My concerns with McCarthy are not even injury related. When you look at the recent QBs, and we started the episode with Anthony Richardson, the QBs that don't have a ton of experience and a ton of snaps tend to come along more slowly or just not be an effective starter at all. If you look at JJ McCarthy in Michigan, not a lot of snaps there. Certainly not as bad as Anthony Richardson or Trey Lance at North Dakota State, but I think it might take some time just because not only does he not have a lot of just snaps played at Michigan, what did they do all the time when they won that national championship, which it's not scrutinized, but Michigan's been punished for that season. So we'll see in the future if that trophy remains. But what did they do a lot that year when they won the national championship?
If I remember correctly, in that Penn State game, they like at one point handed the ball off 27 consecutive times. Like, just stupid numbers.
He had 9 dropbacks in that game. So my point is they ran the ball a lot. While I think that the Vikings want to do that this year, that's why they traded for Jordan Mason. They also have guys like Justin Jefferson, who I still think is the best receiver in the league. They have Jordan Addison, who probably top 30, one of the better younger, certainly one of the better number two receivers in the National Football League. Like you said, they have TJ Hawkinson. They have weapons. So I think they're going to want McCarthy to throw the ball when he needs to. And I'm not saying he isn't able to, but he doesn't have a ton of experience, like a breadth of experience, like a guy like Bo Nix had coming into college, who started for 5 seasons. Jaden Daniels started for 5 seasons. So it might take time. And I think that's the big concern with McCarthy, like you're saying. But I think this roster's good enough to where if he can operate the system at a high level, that kind of negates some of the growing pains and they can still be a very good performing team.
Yes. And just to me, like this, like where we talked about the Packers looking a little flat this past year, that's what I think we're going to get from the Vikings this year. I definitely, like as much as Kevin O'Connell, Brian Flores are some of the best at what they do, you can only scheme so much. The players got to go out and make the plays. And that's where I'm just a little hesitant on some of these pieces coming together, it translating just from one year to the next, like nothing happened. And I'm not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sold on that, especially when you look at the competition in this division. Is just dropping a notch or two from the level of play you were at last year going to be enough to where the Packers and the Lions are still ahead of you? And in that regard, the Lions did win the division last year, but they lost two of their coordinators to head coaching jobs in Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. They're getting a lot of guys back from injury. Is this team heading upwards, downwards, plateauing? Like what's going on? What is the pulse on the kind of fate of the Lions as we move into 2025?
You could make the real argument for both directions, I think. Obviously losing somebody as important as Ben Johnson is going to probably slow the offense down a good bit. And then you also lose Aaron Glenn, who, if you didn't know last year, if you had to guess what the defense ranked in things like EPA per play or points per game allowed, where would you place that unit given all the injuries they had?
I mean, given all the injuries, you would have definitely thought they would have been approaching average, but they were top 10 even after the injuries started piling up. And that's what was impressive. They were able to just generate production based on how Aaron Glenn was able to get guys in positions.
So you lose him on the defensive side and Johnson on the offensive side. That's a lot of cause for concern, right? Especially when the guy on the offensive side, John Morton, is not internal, right? He comes from the Denver Broncos. Luckily, Ben Johnson was a Sean Payton guy, so there should be some familiarity there. So you can really make the argument there that there's going to be serious regression. But then you remember that they had, 25 defenders on IR last year? And if all of those guys, not even if all of them are healthy, if less than half of those guys hit IR, which if you look at defensive regression should happen, the defense might get better given that they have an internal hire at defensive coordinator on that side of the ball, and Kelvin Shepard, who was their linebackers coach, I believe. So I kind of think that they're in the middle. Like they're going to remain around the same where they were. I don't think they're going to win 15 games because that's just hard to project year over year. But it really wouldn't surprise me that Dan Campbell rallies his troops and gets this team to winning the division again with 13 games or something like that. That really doesn't surprise me. I do think they're going to get off to a slow start, especially with losing the coaches and kind of remaking that interior offensive line. But with the talent on this team, I think this is a team that can have a deep playoff run still, despite losing the coaches.
I'm going to hold off on deep playoff run when you have Jared Goff as your quarterback. Like, to me, like we've seen that narrative. It's like the same with Sam Darnold. I don't know if he turns into as much of a pumpkin as Darnold does, but like,
Goff has made multiple Super Bowls and one Super Bowl and I think three NFC championships, right? Or maybe two. At worst, Rams and he made the Lions a couple years ago, yeah, versus the Niners.
Oh, that was that. Yeah, they did.
When
they did
go on that run, yep. Who was the DB that dropped the interception and Ayuk picked it up and scored a 70-yard touchdown or whatever? The point being, he's made it, anything over 30 is like egregious. Point being, he's not a Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, but he can effectively operate a team to get deep into the playoffs. We saw Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo make Super Bowls with Kyle Shanahan. They're on the same. They're in the same tier as Jared Goff to me.
I do. And like that's what I'm saying. It's like that level of production. If you have everything else go right around you, like at that point, like the 49ers had a ton of talent on both sides of the ball on both runs, and the Rams
Lions
did
have that talent, in my opinion.
I totally am with you there, but where we have these concerns about the play callers, we saw something similar with the Eagles after they made their Super Bowl run with Shane Steichen, with I'm blanking out on I want to say
Jonathan Gannon.
There we go. I was like I remember the defensive play caller, but I can't remember the head coach. But Jonathan Gannon being with that Eagles coaching staff, it's like, okay, like that brain drain was huge. And I have a lot of faith that Kelvin Shepard is going to keep some of that identity on defense. You hope the talent that's coming back from injury offsets kind of the gap and you're just able to kind of stay at that same level. My concern is going to be with John Morton. Does he bring the same level of creativity? I think it's going to be a well-buttoned up, well-designed offense. You have enough playmakers on that side of the ball. But for me, like when we talk about a Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan carrying some of these, I would say closer to average quarterbacks, is John Morton that? And I don't think John Morton's that. I think he's good enough to where, exactly like you talked about, maybe you can win like 11 to 13 wins during the regular season, win the division again. I just don't know when the gloves come off in January and your true colors are kind of put to the test. Like I just don't see it with a John Morton, Jared Goff relationship. And that's where I get hesitant with the Lions, is them taking that step. I don't know if those are the guys they need to have, or if these are just kind of placement, kind of hold everything over until we kind of find our new identity.
It's going to take time for sure. Like, I think we can see this team getting off to a bit of a slow start. If I could just read you all seven games before their week 8 bye week. They start in Green Bay to start the season. Then they play against Chicago, Monday Night Football in Baltimore. Lamar Jackson never loses to NFC teams. Then against Cleveland, in Cincinnati, at Kansas City, and then versus Tampa Bay. It's not the easiest start for a new play caller, but I think if they can coalesce and regather after that bye week, it gets much, much easier down the stretch. So my point is they have the talent to continue to compete, but I do think it'll take time, just like it's going to take time with J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota. They're going to have to get going, right? It's not going to be – if it's an instant thing, I'm all the more impressed, right? But I believe this is John Morton's first time as a play caller. So there's going to be a bit of some growing pains, we'll say. But my entire point with the Lions is we should expect growing pains from both sides of the ball. But I think the influx of talent, mainly on defense, can offset that enough to the point where they can still be in contention for the division, which means a home playoff game, which means Jared Goff inside, which means they might be able to win one or two playoff games.
And might is the strong word there. That's where it's just like they were the better team when they faced the Commanders in terms of talent on the roster on either side of the football, because just as much as they were gashed by injuries, the Commanders were a team that just had the second overall pick the year before. It's not like they had a ton of talent on that side of the ball. And so you couldn't get into a shootout and you lost. And so it's those kind of situations where that's where I think it really does matter who the quarterback is. And I don't know if I see Jared Goff beating the Eagles, even though I would argue Goff is better than Hurts. I personally would, as a quarterback, would say Goff is better than Hurts. But like when you look at other quarterbacks that are going to be in the NFC that you have to traverse, I don't know if he's better than Brock Purdy. He's kind of at that same level. I don't think he's better than Jaden Daniels. If Matthew Stafford's healthy, I don't think he's better than him. And then you start looking around in the division. And like if Jordan Love takes that step that we just talked about, I don't think they're in the same tier. I think Jordan Love kind of elevates himself above. And so it's when we talk about like making a difference to make a postseason run, you have to have that quarterback. So yeah, if he gets a home playoff game, they get lucky and they play a team comparable style, like in talent, and the quarterback competition isn't that bad. It's not like this huge discrepancy. Then yeah, he might be able to win a playoff game, but this isn't a team that's going to the Super Bowl. And like maybe I'll eat crow. It's just, I don't think they're set up to do that this year. Last year was their opportunity to make that run.
You're naming off NFC QBs, and it's really bleak. Like when you said, if you don't have the difference maker, is Jaden Daniels like the only one? You could say Dak Prescott maybe, but I don't know if the Cowboys are making the playoffs. We have to see him back from the
injury. Yeah.
Right. And like, so at that point in the NFC, you really don't need the difference maker at QB. You just need a comparable roster around him. And that's kind of my – in the AFC, completely different story. If you send – let's say like the Jared Goff Lions team is in the AFC, they're going to get fried by Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. So like that's where the difference is. But in the NFC, certainly. The last thing I'll say is
Baker Mayfield and the Bucks, like they've gone back and forth each year. Like that's a coin flip game. And like that could happen in the playoffs. So like that's what I'm saying. It's like it's hard to bet on them.
Yeah, and I would say Baker's a better quarterback than Goff. I don't know if they're tiers apart. Maybe like Baker leads that group, but he's certainly better. The last thing I would say is as far as getting defenders back, Aiden Hutchinson was defensive player of the year last year before he got injured. He like was far and away the pressure and sack leader. So if he can get back to that level of play, I feel much better about this team as a whole. But we'll have to see, right? It's going to be the defensive health, hopeful defensive health, versus the brain drain when it comes to the Lions. My point being with all the teams we talked about, maybe not the Chicago Bears, that all three of those teams have good enough, not only resumes, but good enough arguments to win the division. How do you think the division is going to stack up? Unless that's your perfect take, in which case we can get straight into the takes.
That the division shaking out order is not the take. But if I were to say how I think it's going to end, I think it's going to be some order. I want to just lean on the Packers because I think they had some unlucky stretches last year. And I think they've put themselves in a position to take a step. I'm going to bank on that projection rather than what we know. And I'll say the Lions are at 2, the Vikings are at 3, and the Bears are at 4. That's where I feel confident in. I could see the Lions and the Packers switching, but with all the concerns and hesitations of just not seeing a lot of JJ McCarthy, we don't know necessarily what to expect. We haven't seen a full game. And also that durability concern may mean we see the backup. And Sam Howell's known to sling it. So I'm not necessarily concerned about who's coming in for JJ McCarthy, but it's one of those things that, like, until we know what that mystery box is, it's hard to necessarily say this team's going to come out and rock and roll like they did last year.
Sam Howell can sling the ball. He can also take a lot of sacks. The reason Bryce Young didn't have the most sacks in the league his rookie year, when he had one of, if not the worst O-line of all time, is because of the guy named Sam Howell, who played for Washington at the time. I kind of agree with you. I go back and forth every day on the top three, but I'm kind of settling into Packers at 1, then some combination at 2 and 3, and then Chicago at 4. But I think we can kind of shift into takes territory now that we don't, our takes aren't related to the division stacking up, or at least mine isn't. If we go back to the Bears, right? The Bears historically are probably the worst franchise ever when it comes to, or at least of the 32 right now, when it comes to quarterbacks, right? They've never had a 30 touchdown passer in a season, which, considering they're the oldest franchise in the league, is incredible. They've also never had a 4,000 yard passer in a season, which, again, is incredible. We were talking about it pre-recording, and no, I was like, what Bears quarterback do you think is probably their best ever? And we couldn't really think of one other than Jay Cutler in our lifetime, and I think that's where it is. But my take is that Caleb Williams will be the quarterback this season to break one of those two records. He will either have 30 passing touchdowns or he will have 4,000 passing yards. I think, given Ben Johnson's infrastructure and the litany of actual pass-catching weapons, both of those are in the cards. Especially if this is a team that's going to try to fight for a wild card, they're going to have to be slinging it. Because I know Ben Johnson likes to run the ball. I know he likes running back by committee. But who is the guy outside of DeAndre Swift that's going to be a high-volume runner? Is it Roschon Johnson? Because he wasn't high-volume in college. So we don't really know about that. Going to be a lot of passing, and I think it's going to be enough to break one of those records.
The fact that you bring up both of them and then you're like doing this either or instead of like lumping them together, listen, it's such BS. It's such
BS. No, it's not, because no Bears quarterback has ever done it. So, like, it would be in the what are the Bears, 105 years old now, 106 in their 100 more than a century of history, it would be the first time. That's why it's such a hot take, because it hasn't happened before. Every other franchise has done it. Teams like the Texans, who came into existence after I was born, have done it already, you know? So that's why it's such an outstanding take, some might say.
So Caleb Williams was surrounded by a lot of talent. And regardless of what you want to say about Shane Waldron's offense, there were guys that were open that Caleb Williams just flat out missed. This guy still racked up 3,500 yards and 20 passing touchdowns last year. So for me, like you saying, oh, he's going to have 500 more passing yards and 10 more passing touchdowns in a more conducive environment from what we can tell on the surface and how things are trending towards the season. It's funny.
You want to know why it's also kind of an interesting take? How many 30 touchdown passers do you think we had last year?
Three? No, four.
Five.
Oh, it was five. Okay.
A very low number. I would expect it to be closer to 10. So if Caleb Williams can be among the five, how does that place him in the league? You know?
I get that. The comparison is like he had playmakers around him. You're expecting a jump in one of those two departments, which is fine. I think if he hits the 30 passing touchdowns, he hits 4,000 passing yards. I don't think you can get that one without the other one, where I think you can get 4,000 passing yards without 30 passing touchdowns. Regardless, the point being is that his rookie season was a big disappointment. and a first overall pick that was in a bad environment outside of like a Bryce Young, but a guy that we've talked about today is like Jared Goff. And so when he gets Sean McVay in year two, he throws for 3,800 yards, passes for like 28 passing touchdowns. He did have Todd Gurley though. So then it's like that whole comparison. I don't think DeAndre Swift, Roshan Johnson are in that ballpark to where you have to feed a guy of his caliber. I think you can lean more on the drop back game. So we'll see what the mixture is. I think it's a good one. I think you can be a little bit more ballsy with it. That's all. My take, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I've written a fantasy article about this dude. I think he is the truth. You love him as a former Alabama player. And I think we're going to hit this plateau of wide receivers where there are going to be a lot of wide receivers with a lot of great seasons this year, but I don't think they're going to stick out enough to maybe compete with. And I don't know if Jahmyr Gibbs joins the 1,000 club, but I think he has over 2,000 scrimmage yards. I think he probably leads the NFL in touchdowns again. And I think John Morton runs the Detroit Lions offense through the Offensive Player of the Year. And so I think in order to win that award, they probably do have to win the division or at least be like an 11-12 win team. A top five offense, like those kind of accolades will probably have to be around him in order to get that award. But I think Gibbs is the guy to do it. Like, this is a guy that I think he's primed for that year three breakout. And like what he did last year was disgusting. And I think all he needs is about 50 more touches than he got last year. And we really might see a special running back season. So that's my take. I don't know what the odds are, but I would lean Jahmyr Gibbs as Offensive Player of the Year.
I'm not sure how Morton is going to divvy up the touches, right? Obviously, Ben Johnson liked to, not a 50-50 split, but he liked to split it pretty evenly between Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. Even going back to the, it was Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, maybe, as the other running. I don't remember who the other running back was that
it was Jamal season. Williams and DeAndre Swift, yep.
It was DeAndre, okay. Jamal Williams, who broke Barry Sanders' record that season, rushing touchdown record for the franchise. So he likes to split them up. We'll have to see how John Morton does it. I certainly think Gibbs is a candidate for Offensive Player of the Year. I think he, maybe a Bijan Robinson, and then maybe if another it's hard. Jamar Chase just triple crowned and didn't get a single vote, so it's probably going to be hard as a receiver. Maybe if you're a QB get the MVP award, that might start to resurface, but it's going to be tough.
I think we should have like talked about that more. The fact that like there was no discussion because the Triple Crown pool is so much smaller than the 2,000K rushing club. And it's just like Saquon got it because he jumped over a dude backwards and he was on team that
he got it because the team, they were the 2 seed in the NFC, right? Because the Lions were number one.
Like, they were a playoff team.
Well, then that's like the same point with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow's stats were better than everybody else's other than Lamar Jackson's, but they were 9-8, right? So you can't, if you're a 9-8 team, it's hard for the voters. The voters are biased toward the postseason, even though these are regular season awards. That's just how it works, right? So there's going to be bias when you don't make the playoffs. And I think that's a big component of it, you know? The Lions are a safe bet, because I think they're a safe bet to make the playoffs. So Gibbs is going to get more favor. And then more national TV games and stuff like that.
It's just more like you look at like Christian McCaffrey, and I think he won in 2019, right, with the Panthers.
He didn't win it. He should have won it as the 1,000
Was that
guy,
Jefferson?
But Michael Thomas broke the receptions record.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Average depth of reception was like 4 yards, but he still broke the record because he has the most. And that iced McCaffrey, who had probably one of the best running back seasons in the last decade. Maybe Adrian Peterson's up there he's certainly up there with his MVP season, 13 or 14 years ago now. But since then, I think McCaffrey's season was probably the best. They were force feeding him, but still, it was really, really good. And even he didn't win it. So, like, it's very finicky, you know. Even last year, Lamar Jackson could have won it, right, because he didn't win MVP, but they still gave it to Saquon. So, it's Offensive Player of the Year is a very tough award to try to pinpoint, but I think Jahmyr Gibbs is as good a bet as anybody to win that award.
Yeah, I think that's about all I have. I'm not too I don't know, that NFC North, it's three teams to the playoffs last year. Maybe like they're probably primed to do it again with just how weak the NFC is overall. I think the NFC West is very fragile. The NFC East is top heavy, and it's like outside of the Bucks and the NFC South. I wouldn't bet on anybody just currently from the outlook of things, but I think that's about all we have. We talk about the East on Thursday, and like I just alluded to, it is pretty top heavy. Any closing remarks before we get out of here?
Well, you left one team out of the South that I think everybody would like to see make the playoffs, and that's the Carolina Panthers. We'll have to see as far as the season goes. We're talking about a certain Texas team on Thursday, and they have a certain edge rusher that might get traded. Maybe if the Panthers trade for that guy, we'll see. But until then, you can find us on Twitter, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and we will be back Thursday. Keep pounding.